when you're in a relationship with somebody, you really trust that person, right? Like when you're in a relationship, you not only trust them, but you tell them everything. So you're divulging all the information about yourself, about your childhood, your wounds, your insecurities, all to that person, mm-hmm. and also your doubts. Mm-hmm. So if you are saying to your narcissistic partner, is our relationship unhealthy? Or do you think we're in a codependent relationship? What's your partner going to say? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm unsafe. Stay away.
Welcome to the Inspire to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today, I am joined by founder and creator of Unleash Her, Catlin, who not only has already been a guest on our show, but she's a dear friend of mine, and I'm really, really excited for this episode. Just a little bit of background on Catlin as well. Catlin empowers women to turn their passion into purpose-driven success one step at a time. Now, for those that have been following Thrive and Shine Co. on Instagram or just following my journey, I talk a lot about business. I talk a lot about social media, and I'm really excited that today we're actually going to dive deep into something that is quite personal for me and I think will relate to a lot of people. And that is how a lot of very intelligent, rational women, how they end up in toxic or unhealthy relationships. So today we're going to talk about things like trauma bonds. We're going to talk about narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder. And just full disclosure, we're not psychologists. So this really is just a conversation about things that we've experienced, that we've seen as well and observed, and, you know, some common traits to really understand and red flags to avoid as well if you're in the dating scene and if you're starting to experience some discomfort or your nervous system is starting to tell you that, you know, something's not right, how to identify and walk away from a relationship that could potentially be quite damaging. So, Catlin, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you on and so good to have you back.
Thank you for having me, Phoebe. I love your intro. It's very full on and heavy, but yay, welcome, Catlin.
Yeah, Catlin, like you and I have a friendship that's so dynamic. We've talked so much about business. We also have shared a lot with each other. And last year, I was in a relationship with somebody that fully caught me off guard. And for those that know me, the year before I lost my grandfather and my grandmother, who both of whom were like my parents. They played mum and dad roles in my childhood. It was a huge loss. They were my safe people. And my grandma had a stroke and after I lost my grandpa. So there was a lot of grief that I was going through and it was a vulnerable time. And during that time, I actually found that my business really suffered because I was personally struggling and alone. And so I want to just, I guess, disclose that because I think that a lot of the time we hear stories of how people end up in relationships that they should have never been in the first place. And we wonder, like, how did that happen? How did that really strong, independent woman who got really good discernment or intuition, how did she end up in this or how did this happen or why this or why that? And obviously everybody's story is different, but for my story, I think it's really important that I share this from a place of love and understanding as well. Not only love and understanding for the listeners, for the people that are tuning into this podcast episode, but also love and understanding for people that are in a world of pain that, you know, obviously they say wounded people hurt others.
Yeah, hurt people hurt people.
Hurt people hurt people. And so this is also coming from a place of compassion and understanding. But I think it's really important that firstly that we define like what is narcissism? How is it that some people fall into the trap of being in relationships with narcissists and have no idea until it's too late, or why does that happen?
Yeah.
And what is a trauma bond, and how is it that anybody can fall into that trap? So first of all, let's define like what's a toxic relationship and narcissism.
Yeah. Well, to start with, it is any relationship where you do not feel safe to share your feelings, emotions, where you're often perhaps having to compromise your own well-being for the sake of another. Now, I know I am a married woman, recently married.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And
you're still in your honeymoon phase, actually.
Am I? If you say so. But I can attest to the fact that being in a serious relationship does require a great deal of compromise. It is a lot of give and take. It is a lot of hurt feelings and unfairness. But the difference between that and an unhealthy relationship is that you notice for yourself as the, I'll use the word survivor because I don't like the word victim. As the survivor, you yourself are finding that you're the one who makes the compromise, whether it's for their own emotional well-being or because they are highlighting to you the areas that you need to work on emotionally, which is always the case. We always have things we need to work on. Just because I'm married doesn't mean I don't have miles and miles of work to go. And the same is for every single one of us in every life stage. Whereas in an unhealthy relationship, that's really highlighted always just on the survivor. The culprit is constantly highlighting, well, you did this or you need to do that, da, 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 and not taking responsibility for themselves or accountability. But I do know that because this is something that is so personal, well, it's personal for both of us. It is something I haven't got a narcissistic partner. Thank you, Jesus. But I was raised by a narcissist. So I have I'd call it an aged perspective of having to manage a relationship even still with that person. And I want to invite you to share what your thoughts are. This is something that you've been looking into since you discovered that that was your story and your situation as a part of your healing process. So I want to flip the same question to you. What is a unhealthy relationship and how would you define it?
I think that first of all, thank you so much for your definition. I totally agree with what you've just shared. I think that in contrast, let's just start with what is a healthy relationship, because I think that's a lot easier for me to describe. Yeah. So a healthy relationship is a relationship where true healthy adults grow together and they are able to navigate the complexities of relationships. Obviously, when you look at relationships, a lot of stuff comes out. Like our partners are our best mirrors and they're the best, like they're the best gifts in the world when it comes to growth. Because when you are in a relationship, you're faced with all of your undealt with matters.
Ugliness.
Yeah, it's the same as when you're in business. Like when you start a business, all your stuff comes up because you're like
your insecurities and
that's right. Like it's not like when you back in the day when you're employed and you get to switch off at the 9 to 5 and you're not taking accountability and ownership of an entire organization. Mm-hmm. Same thing happens in dating and in relationships. When we're just dating and we're single and we're happy alone and all of that, there's no one that's going to rub us up the wrong way. There's no one that is going to trigger us in ways that are going to bring out the parts of the information and the parts of ourselves that we get to heal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of relationships have a dynamic where there might be an insecure partner, as in attachment styles, with someone that is secure or also someone that's insecure, mm-hmm. right? So I think a healthy relationship is one where regardless of someone's attachment style or wounds, mm-hmm. they are both able to healthily navigate that and grow together because yeah. In no adult relationship do I know of can you find two people that don't need to do any more work. They're completely healed. They've done all their work and they just come together and they're madly in love and it's all healthy and things don't come up.
That's like, right.
Even the most powerful relationship coaches share their stories of like what they've been through to get to where they are.
Yeah.
And things still come up for them. So that's a healthy relationship.
Mm.
A healthy relationship is also one where I'm going to actually share like between a man and a woman because that's what I understand of but, you know, this could go either way. For example, a woman might share with their partner that they are feeling unsafe that they're feeling like they're not being seen or heard, or they're just feeling unsafe. And it's an opportunity for both parties to lean in and to grow and to learn and to heal, and also for more, I guess, more authenticity to come out, for more growth to come out. Mm. Now, in an unhealthy relationship, it's very different. Because in an unhealthy relationship, one partner might feel like they are standing on eggshells.
Yeah.
And they struggle to have those conversations with their partners, because they know that, like, from my own experience, from coming out of a toxic relationship, I know that sharing with my partner back then about feeling unsafe or feeling unseen or feeling not loved.
Yeah.
Was very, very scary for me, because my partner would literally turn into a different person.
Yeah. You're giving him ammunition to use later. You're giving him the blueprint as to how to make you feel more insecure and more unsafe.
That's right. And that blueprint actually occurred in the very beginning of the relationship. It actually occurred in the love bombing stages where my partner was making me feel like he was idolizing me. Mm-hmm. So he was putting me on a pedestal, which is red flag number one, and pretty much idolizing me and making me feel super safe, super, super, like what he called his Q-U-E-E-N, and making me feel like I was the center of his world.
Yeah.
So in contrast, when that mask came off and when the real person came out and we were, you know, a year into the relationship, what I discovered was it was a person that would shift blame, cause and create confusion, start to not only shift blame but also completely, I guess you could say, create a lot of gaslighting, you know. And that is a term that I only started to understand literally this year.
Yeah.
Like I used to hear terms like narcissism, gaslighting, and I would just be like, oh, I really don't want to know. This is like stuff that I just don't want to know about. And that's why we're doing this episode today, because I think it's important that we educate ourselves on this stuff and we protect ourselves, because this happens not just in romantic relationships but also in the workplace.
That's right.
And in friendships as well, and in business partnerships as well. So we've got to understand that when you're dealing with someone that is shifting blame, causing confusion, or, for example, one thing that I experienced a lot was I would ask a question and all of a sudden the person's answer, which could have been a yes or a no, would create so much confusion that I didn't even remember what I asked in the first place.
Yeah.
Because that person has now gone on this complete tangent talking about something else and moved away from the topic. And those are some red flags that we actually need to understand. Because if someone is monopolizing and dominating conversations, or they're being completely overly loving, overbearing in the beginning, they can turn into someone that becomes quite aggressive.
Yep.
And also turn into someone that will actually make you feel like your feelings or your experiences are not real.
Yeah.
Some people might make you feel like they don't matter, but yeah, they will subtly start to discourage you, isolate you, and project a lot of their own stuff onto you.
That's right. Before we jump straight into the red flags, I looked up what the different types of narcissism were, and I just thought I'd just quickly share the four types of narcissism that there is, because they are so different. So the first one that comes up is grandiose narcissism, and the traits for that is it's the most recognizable form of narcissism. Individuals with grandiose narcissism are extroverted, assertive, and confident. They often seek attention, feel superior to others, and they lack empathy. Their behavior may dominate conversations, exaggerate their achievements, and expect admiration from others. The next is vulnerable, or known as covert narcissism. And these traits are, this form of narcissism is more subtle. Vulnerable narcissists are commonly introverted. They are sensitive. They have low self-esteem. They often feel unappreciated or misunderstood, and they may harbor deep insecurities. Their behaviors appear as shy or anxious, but harbor fantasies of greatness. They might be passive-aggressive, resentful, or overly defensive. There is also malignant narcissism. The traits include malignant narcissism is a more severe and certainly more dangerous form, combining narcissistic traits with an antisocial behavior, aggression, and sometimes paranoia. This is on the more extreme spectrum of the condition. And the behaviors, these individuals can be manipulative, they are hostile and sadistic. They often enjoy exerting power over others, and they may have little regard for the well-being of those around them. Now, there is a fourth one, but before I jump into that one, I'm a huge, huge fan of true crime, and I can say with fair confidence, in my absolute no qualification, that most of the killers in the true crime that I watch are all malignant narcissists, 100%. So that is definitely the far more extreme type. And I do want to say, if you are feeling physically unsafe, then there is, if you're in Australia, there's a group called Safe Steps, and they're basically the first step for any kind of help you might need. They will also help you stay in a relationship as well as leave a relationship, depending on what you need. But I highly recommend Safe Steps. If you are not feeling 100% safe or you're not quite sure, just call them and start a conversation. Sorry. And the last one is communal narcissism. The traits for a communal narcissist, they derive their self-esteem from their perceived contributions to the community or a cause. They see themselves as altruistic, empathetic, and morally superior. Their behaviors, they may engage in charity work primarily for recognition and admiration rather than a genuine concern for others. And I can say, as somebody who has 10 years working in the not-for-profit in humanitarian aid, I have met a lot of people who fit this type of narcissism, but that it is more a type of narcissism that affects you as a business person, somebody who might manage you or something like that. So it's just an extra little thing to keep in mind. But yes, I'd love to jump into those red flags, specifically from the relational perspective, because that's something that you have personal experience on.
Well, I think firstly, let's talk about what are the signs that you are dating a narcissist, because today's podcast episode is the focus on this is really safe dating. Like this is hugely about how men and women, but especially women who are quite vulnerable to this, how they can avoid falling for a narcissist and avoid these things early on so that later on it's not as damaging. Like for me, I'm very, very grateful that for me, I came out of that relationship actually surprisingly managing a lot better than I thought than you could. Like you hear a lot of stories of women that end up staying in these relationships. Yep. And in a few years, they go from strong, independent, financially secure to completely isolated from their friends and their family,
yep.
Financially dependent. And I'll explain how that happens. And also just not knowing who they are anymore.
Yeah.
Because they have been so accustomed to being put down and not mattering, and also because of the gaslighting that occurs, which is actually quite severe and quite serious.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about this first. So yep. How do you know that you're in a potentially abusive or toxic relationship that could end up being quite dangerous?
I mean, we've talked quite a bit about this, but the first thing is that gut feeling. I know it sounds foo-foo perhaps, but we have an innate ability as human beings to sense something's not quite right. And so if you are starting to date somebody, you really like them, they tick all the boxes, but something in your gut's just you can't quite settle, that is your body telling you that this is not the right person. I come from a background where I had a lot of insecurity about relationships. I have dated a lot. I have actually been engaged twice, and I have been in a relationship where I've been physically harmed, but I've also been in relationships where I've been emotionally harmed. And so all that baggage compounds to a now 34-year-old, thank God I found an amazing man, but when I first started dating, and actually still there's still traits left over from all those things that mean you might think, oh, no, it's just because my ex was this, or it's just because of when I was a kid this happened. So you dismiss that gut feeling, but don't dismiss it. It is actually real. And worst case scenario, you just simply miss out on something that wasn't quite right. Maybe it wasn't dangerous, but it wasn't quite right. You have to trust your gut. Your gut tells you stuff, and we don't listen to it because it's not convenient. And I know I can speak to women who are in their 30s and late 20s who are at that point in their life where, anxious about the fact that spiritually and socially they're supposed to be married now. They're supposed to be on this. That word supposed to be just is the worst. But it's the worst comment that we can say over ourselves. We're supposed to be somewhere. We're not supposed to be anywhere.
Or should.
Should be, exactly. No, these supposed to, these shoulds, they're nonsense. You are supposed to be where you're at right now.
Exactly.
That's where you're supposed to be because that's where you are. So people might compromise themselves to be in relationships with these sorts of people and ignore that gut feeling because of the season of life they're in. And I tell you, it is much better to be single in your mid-30s than it is to be in a relationship with somebody who doesn't honour and respect you, who doesn't make you feel empowered and doesn't love you, because that's just no way to live. That is not a way to live. I mean, you know what it feels like to be belittled and gaslit. And gaslighting was something that's just come out in the last 5-10 years. It is a term that's just recently come out. And I remember being in my 20s, because as I mentioned, I had a narcissistic parent, and I'd never heard this term gaslighting, but it was the most validating and freeing thing in the world because I suddenly understood what I had experienced. There was a word, there was a term to describe that I wasn't crazy and that this was real. This person was really trying to just manipulate me to serve them. And I think that understanding what gaslighting is really, really important. And it is in that gut feeling. I think gaslighting especially, because you go, wait, it's sort of like whiplash. You say something and, I mean, this isn't a psychological definition, but as I understand it, gaslighting is when you know something to be true and the narcissist will convince you that that didn't happen.
Or that it's not.
That it's not real, that you are delusional and your feelings are valid and your experiences are valid, and this person is trying to turn that and make you insecure and make you unsure. And from that unsure and insecure place, it makes you vulnerable, and they can create something out of that vulnerability that serves them.
Absolutely. I think the most dangerous thing about being in a relationship with a narcissist is that when you're in a relationship with somebody, you really trust that person, right? Like when you're in a relationship, you not only trust them, but you tell them everything. So you're divulging all the information about yourself, about your childhood, your wounds, your insecurities, all to that person, mm-hmm. and also your doubts. Mm-hmm. So if you are saying to your narcissistic partner, is our relationship unhealthy? Or do you think we're in a codependent relationship? Mm-hmm. What's your partner going to say?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm unsafe, stay away. Of course no. They're going to say, no, that's what everyone else is telling you. That's a lie. Your mom and dad don't want you to be happy, mm-hmm. or that friend's just jealous. And come on, look at us. Like, you and I talk about everything. We open up about everything. We have such a healthy relationship. Or in my case, my partner was saying, we are such a great team.
Yeah.
So I was believing what he was saying rather than trusting my friends and family and my gut feeling in the end.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the signs very early on that you can definitely trust is that if you are starting to divulge super sensitive information, mm-hmm. very, very early on, like say in the first month, and this person is like prodding you and asking you and wanting to like learn more about you, and for some reason you're just feeling really, really open to being vulnerable. And I'm not talking about like when you're dating someone and you just have chemistry and a spark, yep. and it's a healthy dynamic. I'm talking about someone that just constantly seems to be like pushing you to share more information, asking you more, being super curious and inappropriate, pushing boundaries. If you notice that innately, like in your gut, you are feeling like your boundaries are being pushed,
yep.
that is a sign that the discomfort is a sign, and that is a sign that that person, that person might have some kind of an agenda,
yep.
because normal healthy dynamics, normal healthy relationships are when two adults feel safe, and so the other person also knows how to stop when you're not feeling safe, and they also know when to, I guess, ask questions and when to just leave it for the next date or leave it for a month later.
I have an example that's coming to mind because I obviously know your partner.
Ex-partner.
And I've journeyed a bit of your story just by pure coincidence.
You were actually there right from the very beginning when him and I were still friends.
I to use the term, it was God-driven. But
yeah.
I am remembering the first time that you introduced me to him, I think it was only the second time you'd ever met him.
And I think it was the third, yeah.
Third time. And straight off the bat, I was like, this person is unsafe, because in our 3-hour conversation, he controlled everything. So he would basically divulge something extremely personal, extremely vulnerable, and just something that, you know, he had claimed to never have told anyone in his life. And it was just because I happened to work in the field of the thing that he had endured. And so he was telling us, me, all of this information. And I remember just watching you go, oh, he's just so open and vulnerable. And whereas I'm like, what is this dude's agenda? Like, why is he telling me this? Because I was raised by one. So I had that more suspicion, I suppose.
I remember my gut feeling that very day, actually. Yeah. I actually remember sitting at that place, that restaurant, feeling like my intuition, like there were red flags going off like crazy. It was like an explosion of red flags. But at the same time, there was something in my heart that really felt for him as well. And that's where that victim mentality comes out. So that's why it's so important to understand that a covert narcissist isn't going to be someone that just comes out and starts putting you down.
Like,
I think we need to understand that they are called a covert narcissist for a reason. They start off kind, victim, and they pull all of your heartstrings to the point where you're like feeling sorry for them and feeling like you almost owe them something because they've done so much giving to you and they're so generous and kind that you almost owe it to them to help them through whatever they say they've gone through or they're going through.
I do remember having a conversation with you, and I'm sorry if this comes across as me being just a completely selfish person, but I remember him, you telling me that he was threatening to harm himself, and that was a strategy. That's a really common strategy, using mental health to trap the partner. And I remember you'd said he'd threatened to hurt himself, and I'm like, so let him. I was just like, he's not going to. And even if he does, it's another attempt to manipulate you. So just walk away and wash your hands. And I can imagine, because I've been there, but I can't imagine for the first time hearing that and going through that, how you can just walk away from somebody. You care about them. You see beyond just their disorder. It's probably actually worth mentioning. We probably should have mentioned this a bit earlier, but there is a difference between narcissistic behavior and the behavioral condition of a narcissist.
Which is a personality disorder.
It's a personality disorder. It's something diagnosable by a psychologist or psychiatrist. So there is a difference. We are all a little bit narcissistic because essentially we are all selfish. We are all a little bit unintentionally, sometimes intentionally manipulative. We all have those traits. So,
just as well, something that I've learned recently is that we're born narcissistic. Like babies, that's how they survive.
Yep.
But a healthy person grows up knowing that they don't need constant validation from their caregivers anymore, and they can give themselves self-validation over time and self-reassurance.
They also possess empathy and compassion, the ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
And this
is something that a disordered narcissist cannot do. They really struggle to put themselves in another person's shoes. It's very, very difficult.
But they can fake it very well.
Oh, well, that's the thing. They've had to, in order to societally, like to fit into society, they've had to learn to match and mask.
Absolutely. And like one thing I want to add to that as well is, I guess from my own experience, if I had known the signs, like say if I had listened to an episode like this or I'd like read about it, which most people don't. Most people go through life not really until they've personally had an experience of that, not really learning about it, reading about it, because it's obviously not something that's very light and, you know, doesn't bring a lot of like joy and happiness.
Yeah.
But for me, like just going back to those early stages, I think one thing that I can definitely say is that the first 2 or 3 or 4 encounters with this person was full of red flags.
Absolutely.
But why and how do people like myself end up in those situations? Several reasons, and I really want to touch on this because this will help a lot of, I think, men and women. I think one of the things is isolation. One thing that I definitely, looking back, could have done better. And now this is also the reason how I've managed to heal and grow from this situation is making sure that no matter what you were going through, whether it's a death in the family or something financially is going on in your business, surround yourself with people mm-hmm. that will inspire you, lift you up. Mm-hmm. Go find a co-working space. Go and don't just work from home and be
join
alone.
Join a church.
Join a church, yeah.
Build
or
a community.
And don't just latch on to the first person that mm-hmm. gives you that feeling, because I know, like, from having worked with a therapist now since that relationship, I discovered that because growing up, my grandma idolized me a lot. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that was just like her way of showing love. Yeah. And I used to always think, like, this is so unnecessary. Like, I'm like, please do not put me on the pedestal. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not. But she would, like, I was the apple of her eye. You know, she only had two granddaughters. Mm-hmm. One was in China and one, she grew up with me from the age of two.
Yeah.
And so when she had her stroke, literally about a month later, I ended up meeting this right. person that eventually yeah. became my partner. Yeah. And he completely
filled that void.
It filled that void because I didn't know how to fill that void back then.
Can I also mention though, and you mentioned it early on, and so narcissists have a very predatory mindset. And so at the time when we met this person, he was married and he had a young child. And he latched onto you because you were in a vulnerable place. So it's really common, no matter, it could be something small. Well, I mean, it's not, everything's relative, but you could lose your job. You could lose a family member. You could lose your dog.
Like, or have been made redundant or something.
Some sort of change in your life that produces the feeling of grief. Moving away, whatever it is.
Or be, you know, going through a lawsuit or a divorce or something.
That's exactly right. So anything that produces a vulnerability in you like that, like loss, a narcissist will come in and fill that void. They're looking for people in that situation. So it's not because you don't handle grief well. It's actually because that's just a light bulb goes off in their head without them even being aware of it.
Yeah.
It says, that's my next person. That's if you are a person in this situation and you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering, am I in this? How did I get in this? What have I done wrong? You've done nothing wrong. You were just simply somebody who someone else took advantage of in a season of your life.
And I, you know, there's a term called narcissistic supply, right? And so I was his supply. Mm-hmm. And a narcissist or someone with narcissistic tendencies, we're not going to label, I don't want to label someone as a narcissist because I don't have, you know, the right to do that or the qualifications to
that
either. But someone that has narcissistic behaviours and tendencies who's deeply wounded and insecure in themselves, they have what psychology calls supply. And a supply is basically someone that will give them the validation that they are unable to give themselves that will help them feel more secure, and also someone that will make them feel good, make them look good. So if they are with someone that is more successful than them, that's more intelligent or that is financially more stable and independent than them, someone that is empathetic, that will feel their pain and feel sorry for them, those are the type of people that they latch onto. And it doesn't have to be romantically too. I've literally witnessed this person now have new narcissistic supply who are the same gender as them, you know, who now work for them or who's going through a divorce, who is kind and empathetic but just vulnerable, who will literally pay their bills and cook for them when they're having their own meltdown or whatever, who has such a heart of gold, or, you know, a friend that is just empathetic or sympathetic who is going through her own stuff, who's lonely or going through, I guess the key is, I think the key is don't be lonely. Like, I think really the key is surround yourself with good people that build you up, that will inspire, motivate and make you feel good when you walk away.
Yep.
Because if you walk away with feelings like I'm confused or this person is overbearing, Those are key signs.
Yep.
Like if they are pushing your boundaries, they make you feel like you should start divulging personal information and details, and they're putting you on the spot, asking you all these questions and you don't know why.
Yep.
Or maybe they're texting you constantly or calling you a lot and it's really sudden. Mm. Those are signs. And, you know, narcissistic supply or people that fall for narcissists, it's not always romantic,
no.
You know, and a lot of the time they don't know they're someone's supply because I guess the explanation is narcissists, they are basically using their supply
yeah.
for their own mm-hmm. benefit,
yeah.
whether it's financial benefit, whether it's to fill that void, whether it's to validate themselves, whether it's because they are insecure. Whatever it is,
yep.
I think it's really important that people understand if they're becoming someone's supply,
yep.
that there's nothing good that will come of that. Like
yep.
later down the track, that person's mm-hmm. mask is yep. going to eventually yep. come off. And when you see the person for who they really are,
mm-hmm.
it's traumatic.
Yeah, it's shocking because
– Well, they say that trauma isn't necessarily just what happens. It's actually – the degree of shock or surprise that comes with it.
Yeah, trauma is relative.
Yeah.
So we've planned with this podcast to do a series where we speak into specific areas of this, ways to not just recognize it as we're talking about today, but also how to basically how to protect yourself from it. And also we're going to talk about what it's like to be the friend of somebody who's in this situation because obviously we've been through this. So we do have a few more episodes that we hope that you can check in on. But I wanted to, before we finish today, I wanted to give a list for the listener who is questioning, am I in a narcissistic relationship? I'm going to just spout off a bunch of things right now that I want you, the listener, to ask yourself, does my relationship measure against these things? So is your partner overstepping boundaries? Are they ignoring personal space or emotional limits? One of the first things that I recommend for any person in a relationship is to instill boundaries. Mm. Boundaries are really, really important. They're the way you respect yourself. So it's really, really important. As somebody who, again, I mentioned I had relationship drama from my past, I had to learn in order to have a healthy relationship, I have to instill boundaries. So is your partner overstepping those boundaries or ignoring them? Love bombing. Are you experiencing an excessive amount of attention to create dependency? We will speak specifically into some of these in greater detail as well in future episodes. Belittling your accomplishments. Are they undermining your success? Do you come home and to celebrate something and they point out why it's not that big a deal?
Well, they might not even point it out. It might just be the look on their face,
right.
their energy. It just doesn't seem genuine.
Yeah,
it's just
undermining.
Or it's almost like they seem slightly disappointed that you've done well. But a narcissist can still hide that and pretend they really want the best for you they're really celebrating your wins.
And you're not going to have all these. So I'm listing these, but you may not be – don't think, oh, well, I don't have the third and seventh, so it's fine. So are they dictating your feelings? Are they telling you how you should feel? Are they creating a victim mentality, always being the wrong person? When they tell you a story of something that happened at work today, are they always the victim? Are they always the one that's been wronged? Gaslighting, which we talked about. Are they making you question your reality? Inconsistent behavior. Do they have extreme mood swings?
That's a big one.
Are they monopolizing conversation? Do they dominate discussions and make it all about them? When you are out in public, especially in a business context, I've seen people do this a lot where they change. Mind you, it's also common in ADHD, monopolizing conversations. It's a way that they identify with each other by saying, oh, I've experienced this. So again, just reiterating, doesn't necessarily mean that your partner has a narcissistic personality disorder, but just highlight these things. Just ask yourself, are there more of these true than not?
Yeah, and just to add to that, what that could look like is it everywhere you go, do you find that your partner always has to be the center of attention? Do you find that even just going to a dog park with them, they suddenly start talking to a stranger and making you feel like you're not even there and they do it all the time, everywhere you go? Maybe even when the waiter or the waitress comes around, they're dominating the conversation. They're talking and talking and bringing all the attention to themselves to the point where you feel like you're almost a bit invisible.
Yeah.
Like these are signs and,
warning signs, yeah. The next one is isolation. Cutting you off from your friends and family. Now, regardless, if you are someone listening to this and that is something you're experiencing, regardless of whether they're a narcissist or just simply the relationship's unhealthy, isolation is a very dangerous trait. And if you're finding yourself separated from your family
and your friendship circles and you're having to create new ones through them, I recommend that you reach out to your old friends right now. Just pick up your phone and text an old friend, text your parent, because isolation is extremely dangerous and is when you are most vulnerable. Conditional affection, so they will love and support you, but you know it's always conditional. They don't offer you unconditional love or affection. They will do something called projection, accusing you of their own flaws, which I've seen so much. Own relationship with my narcissistic parent, they project. I'll just randomly, once this parent said, "I wish you had never been born." And this was about 20 minutes after telling me the reason they don't speak to their father is because they once said, "I wish you'd never been born." I was like, okay. Well, first of all, I know that's not true.
That's very hurtful though.
But their life is amazing because I was born. So I didn't know that.
I love that you know that.
I do know that. But I have God. I have Christ. So I know that I'm not an accident. So that's projection. A need for validation. So they're constantly seeking praise. Now, I do want to preface, as the child of a narcissist, I have a real problem with a need for validation in my relationship, and that's something that I'm personally having to work on because I was starved of it growing up. I actually crave it to an unhealthy degree. So again, just preface, this doesn't necessarily mean anything.
But it could mean everything.
But it could
too,
mean everything.
Especially if you're finding that you're constantly being asked things like, or being told things like, "Oh, I bet no one else has ever treated you like this. I bet no one else has ever done this for
yeah,
you."
That's true.
Or, "I bet you've never felt this way with anybody else." Or getting you to like verbally confirm that what they've done is the best,
that's
or
right.
that what they've done is unique, or getting you to verbally confirm like out loud, and you're like, "This is so uncomfortable right now." And they're saying, "Have
that's
you
true.
Ever experienced this?" Or,
that's
they
a really
are
good
signs.
Point. Yeah, because I just need to hear, "I love you" more often. I don't need that stuff. So that's a really good point. Thank you. That's very important. No, I don't think I've ever said to my husband, "I'm the best person you've ever been with," right? I don't want to know that answer.
Or, "I'm the most beautiful," or "tall," or, you know, strong or handsome, or "I bet no one's ever, you know, picked you up and like lifted you over their shoulder or something."
Picked you up in the middle of the night from a whatever. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, don't. Yeah. Does your partner lack empathy? Do they have an inability to connect with your personal emotions?
Now, I think I'm just going to stop you right there. I think that's actually a really hard one, because I still till this day do not know if the person I was in a relationship with had or faked empathy, or what was real, because, I mean, in my situation it was very unique. Like, this person wasn't physically abusive, so it's very, very covert. This person wasn't putting me down. It was, in fact, the opposite. He was always like, "I want to make you famous. I want to see you go on global stages and this and that." Mm-hmm. But I think that this is a really, really hard one to pick, because – for example, he was very good at tearing up in the middle of a conversation, again, making it all about himself, but just seemingly having empathy or emotions. But in the end, during like one of my darkest times, I noticed that he was able to just completely discard me and was cold and ruthless. And
it's like a switch.
Yeah, so I find that one really hard, because if you were to ask me this a year ago or a year and a half ago, I'd be like, "Oh, yeah, they're so empathetic. They're so kind."
Yeah, I know.
But I've they can also but they can also put that on, right?
Yeah.
So that's a tricky one.
It is. It definitely is. Yeah, one you have to look really, really closely at, I think. So I have seven more. So something called triangulation. Creating competition by comparing you to others. So that could be comments like, "I wish you would do your hair like that person," or, "That girl looks so much better in that dress than I think you could." Just things that make you look externally to try and appease them. Basically, just comparison. And if your partner is saying, "I wish you looked as good in that outfit as she does," then that's really horrible. And
or like, "I wish you dressed like her."
"I wish you dressed like her. I wish you did your makeup like her. I wish you were at home more like so-and-so. I wish you, you know," it could be anything. "I wish you, you know, raised our kids like like how she does. Look how great a mother she is. Look how great she is. Look at how she's running her business. She's taking care of the kids. Her husband wants nothing. I come home and you haven't cooked yet. Those sorts of things.
Yeah. I mean, I've experienced that before many years ago, but I don't think that's necessarily, you know.
It's unhealthy trait, but it's not
just, yeah, it's just mean. Like it's just not good for relationships in general. But again, like if you're just seeing one or two of these in your partner, it could that's just fine. Be that your partner is
insecure about something.
Yeah,
you
I mean.
Need to go to therapy together.
I was going to say it's not fine, but it's definitely, and it's something to definitely discuss with them and see how they respond and, yeah, go to therapy and stuff. But if you're seeing, like, a lot of this and there's, like, more yeses than no's.
Yeah, that's right. Then be concerned because there is more yeses than no's, then we can fairly confidently say you're in an unhealthy relationship, regardless of narcissistic or not. Yeah.
Like, for example, I remember when I was going through this list, like the relationship I was in, he ticked 15 out of 20 of these.
That's
but
terrifying.
When I was in the relationship, I was focusing on the five that he didn't and
that's
going, exactly well, right. He can't be a narcissist that's because good. He doesn't do this. He doesn't physically abuse me or put me down. That doesn't necessarily mean that person is, and it's definitely something to pay attention to.
So sensitivity to criticism, they overreact to any critique. Backhanded compliments, the compliment sandwich, the classic compliment sandwich, which is compliments that have a sting. So,
oh, I've got a really good one.
Yeah.
For example, you're looking a bit fat in this, but you're not fat. You're just bloated.
That is great. That is such a good example. Absolutely.
Oh, I remember hearing that. Wow. And after... later that night, I was like, that does not sit well with me. No. And I remember confronting him about it. And was there an apology? Mm-mm. Absolutely not. Will you get an apology from a narcissist?
Sensitivity to criticism? No.
No, because a true narcissist will never admit that they are wrong. They are never wrong. And the only time they will apologize is during the love bombing phase.
Absolutely, 100%. This actually, the backhanded compliments lean straight into the next one, which is blame shifting, so making you responsible for their emotions. So you'll go to him and say, when you said that, that was really unfair, and he could shift the blame to being, you just need to work on your confidence in your own body and know that it's that you are beautiful and exactly how God made you. And it's like,
yeah. Oh my goodness.
Like, yes, that's true.
I think that's actually what happened. I think I remember a response very, very similar to that. Like, you know, I wish you should just not have such critical standards of yourself. Like, stop looking at, you know, models on Instagram or something. Where I was like, hang on, no, wait a minute. I was just telling you that I didn't like the comment that you made. How did you now suddenly make this about what I view on Instagram?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, another thing you might find is interrupting or dismissing your opinions, valuing your input. This is also human behavior, so it might not necessarily be as common. Guilt and pity manipulation. So this is something you definitely went through. Guilt or pity manipulation. So this is somebody using guilt or pity to control you. So are they oversharing some really personal details and using that as excuse for their behavior, an excuse for their outburst or comments, and they manipulate you with it. Well, you don't know what it's like to be in this situation and da da. And the last one is flipping the script, making you the problem when they are confronted, which is similar to what we just said about blame shifting.
I think that for me, that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yep.
I remember in that last week I had in that relationship, the last week of the cycle of abuse, I remember sharing with my friend and his two new supply, with the four of us had gone out for dinner. And I was sharing with that friend over dinner that, you know, I felt like there was some stuff that I really wanted to bring up that I was really unhappy about in the relationship. And later on that night when we went home in the car, I said, I've actually got to, like, you know, I really want to talk about something. But I want to do it when we're at home, where we can sit down, face each other, have a cup of tea, and just have crystal clear communication and, you know, all the stuff that you learn about in like healthy relationship dynamics. Mm-hmm. And the first boundary that he pushed was, no, let's do it now. Yep. I need to know now what is it and I need to know right now. And I was like, but you're driving. No, I need to know right now.
Yep.
And I guess the second thing that happened was he just shut down. Well, actually, before he shut down, he started to push blame. So very exactly like what you've just said, he started to talk about how I did something a long time ago that made him feel really insecure or really unhappy, and how hurtful it was that I went to see a friend and lied to him and told him that it wasn't that friend.
Yeah.
Basically, a year ago, I'd caught up with a friend after feeling very unsafe that day. And I knew that, you know, the guy I was in the relationship with would feel very, very insecure about this friend. And it was the first time I'd ever lied. And I basically was guilt tripped for it for a very, very, very long time. Yeah. And it was one of those things where he never let it go.
Yeah.
And I felt bad about it every time we brought it up.
Yeah.
So when we were in the car and I said, hey, there's something that I want to talk to you about that, you know, kind of is bothering me, he brought that up again.
Of course.
And that's a very typical narcissistic behaviour. Yeah,
so if I can recommend to our listeners anything just to take away just from this episode, it would be if you've heard these and you're recognising, like Phoebe said, she had 15 out of 20, if you're concerned that you have too many, more than 50% are yes, that's my experience, I would recommend to start imposing some boundaries in your relationship right now. Write yourself a list of what those are so that you have them in print for yourself, because we tend to move the line of boundaries and they're there to push it. So draw them, make them clear, whatever they are. For my partner and I, we had boundaries such as we would always leave, because we're Christian, so we don't sleep together before marriage. We had a boundary where we had to leave by 10 p.m. So whoever's house we were at, 10 p.m. Now, that boundary didn't really work for us because we go out to a movie, it finishes at 11 p.m. So eventually that did move to midnight. So you can negotiate them if they're not working. Is that boundary being disrespected? Are they saying, oh, no, you know, I'm tired, I might just sleep here, I'll sleep on the couch. Like, put those boundaries in writing for yourself, journal them and tell them to your partner. Not necessarily that one, like you have to be gone by midnight. That's a silly one. You do you. And just start acknowledging when those boundaries aren't being respected, because when your boundaries aren't being respected, you're not being respected, and that's what I want. I want for a listener who is experiencing this for themselves to feel respected and honoured, as well as loved and taken care of. That would be probably the only practical thing I would give to our listeners today after listening to this. But we will have some more episodes coming up on this topic, like I said, whether you're the friend of somebody going through this and how to support a friend, maybe understanding a little bit more about the gaslighting and manipulation, go a bit more in depth into some of these things. And also what I think is probably most important is that we do an episode talking specifically into healing post-relationship, post-experience, how do we recover? And I can speak to it if you're like me and you have a person who is a narcissist who is still in your life, and how to manage that and how to build those boundaries for yourself and to respect your own boundaries.
Thank you so much, Catelyn. I absolutely loved that list. Thank you for what you've shared as well and for coming out and being vulnerable about your own experience. Mm. I hope that to all the listeners that have tuned in, that you've gained something from this, that you, and I strongly suggest that if there are any terms that you've heard, like trauma bond or gaslighting or NPD, and you want to look it up to learn more, I highly suggest that if that has come up for you, that you definitely look into it and dive into it, because there is a lot of liberty and freedom on the other side. Mm-hmm. And it's also a great preventative strategy as well, even if you've never experienced that before, to actually look into it, because in life we encounter all sorts of people with all sorts of, I guess, underlying motives and we need to look after ourselves and baggage. Yeah. So, listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to share a lot of the links as well to some resources that you can look into in the show notes. I'm also going to share some of the definitions in the show notes as well. And stay tuned because Catlin and I have another episode or a few more episodes to come that are really going to help you avoid being in these sticky situations or even support a friend that's in a sticky situation like this. Mm. Where in our next episode, we're going to talk about the love bombing trap and also how to protect yourself, boundaries in dating. Mm. And in a further episode, we're going to talk about healing from narcissistic relationships and also understanding gaslighting. Yeah. So thank you so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful day and we'll see you guys again soon. So thanks for tuning in and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.